Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 195 of the show. Here I'm your co-host Alexander Gungi-Rizik, joined as always by Samuel Rowan. And wow, for the first time, well, third time I guess if you count Champions Cup, but still, again, that feels a bit more like a CONCACAF fever dream. As per usual, we've got a game to break down. It's the best time of year. Nothing better than sitting back and diving into the weeds of the Vancouver Whitecaps game. And of course, that was their season opener, Charlotte FC MLS action. Lots to dive into there, lots to dive into off the field as well. You know, got a chance to speak to Vanni Sartini last week, got a chance to speak to Axel Schuster last week. A lot of interesting news and notes on the Whitecaps, the present, the future of the team. Lot going on there, some moves off the field because there's no, you know, never slows down in the wheeling and dealing, and a lot happening of course around MLS and continuing into next week. The Whitecaps' second game comes on the road against San Jose, so we'll definitely dive into all of that in a very busy week. Again, I mean, I just we haven't even, again, barely touched on the CPL. The League One BC schedule's out, so there's a lot of tasty matchups. You know, CPL 5-6 weeks away, and we haven't even touched on those subjects yet. Every week where we've just got a lot on our plate with the Whitecaps alone. But before we dive into everything Whitecaps in this episode 195, Sam, how's it going this week?
Yeah, doing very, very well. This is a prototypical third sub episode, right? We have a match to look back on and recap. We have a match to preview. We have other news and notes both around MLS and just, you know, Vancouver Whitecaps, Canadian soccer in general. And Alex, this is a bit of a tricky one to evaluate. This is a true and the crowd goes mild situation, a 1-1 draw, some good, some bad, a lot of in between. It felt like a bit of a false start. Like, I almost feel like this road match in San Jose, this is another chance for the Whitecaps to, you know, really properly kickstart their season. There was all this anticipation. Shout out, a great crowd, almost 30K in attendance. Awesome to see. This is, you know, the messy effect at work, altering these match attendances in Vancouver around season ticket packs and stuff like that. So, you know, we're going to dive into not just the fact that, okay, it was a 1-1 draw and it was a mediocre result for the Vancouver Whitecaps, but the nitty gritty behind it, what went on. But also keeping in mind, I think, the fact that this is match one of 34, right? There's a lot to come here. You know, a season is not won or lost on, I want to say, match day one, but for the Whitecaps, it was actually, weirdly, according to MLS, match day three, because match day one and two were both together because of the RSL Miami, and it was MLS doing MLS things. But match day one for Vancouver, match day three overall, you know, there's a lot of time left. The Whitecaps are hoping to have a couple impact contributors back this weekend down in California. So, yeah, we're going to tee up the matchup, what's upcoming for Vancouver this weekend, but also having a look back at Charlotte. So, as always, looking forward to getting into it here on the Third Sub.
Yeah, and like, I guess without much further ado, we'll dive right into the first hot button topic, that being the Whitecaps 1-1 draw with Charlotte. And yeah, it's really a tough one to gauge because I think, again, there's always multiple ways you can look at a draw like this. Of course, the first one is, did you gain a point? Did you drop two? It's, you know, I think you'd lean towards saying they dropped two just because I felt like the game was there for them to be won. But
Eastern Conference opponent, I will throw that out. That's a little bit of relief. The fact that you're, you know, not giving away a point to a conference rival at home, that at least provides something.
Yeah, that's it, right? Like, it definitely, you know, considering a few factors, it looks like a point gain. But then again, I would argue that you still probably should have won this game. These are the sorts of games that really hurt the Whitecaps last year, those 5 to 10 points that we alluded to last episode that really could have been the difference between fifth and second, which might not seem like much, but hey, it gives you a more home field advantage, gives you a more favorable matchup, could have made a big difference in the end. And that's where it's really at. It's really tough to gauge because I was surprised because, again, I agree with you. It was very much my sentiment watching that game. I kind of wrote about it in my post-game piece for the third sub, you know, kind of the few days since talking about it. It's just a very meh game. Like, it wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't something I was sitting like, oh, the Whitecaps have huge problems, but it just wasn't very good either. It's just more like, you know, and that's why I think it's so hard to gauge. And I think that's why I was a bit surprised to see some of the sentiment around this one was more that like, ooh, this was a very negative result. This felt like a loss. This Whitecaps team has no direction. The offseason was terrible. You kind of, you know, saw all those, the range of emotions, and understandably so. But I guess, you know, to one extent, I guess that's the level of expectation where this Whitecaps team should be very good. They are very good. You know, when you're not playing very good, the expectation lowers. Whereas, okay, maybe 2-3 years ago, you'd feel like a great result. Like, all right, you know, you got points on the board. You know, it's an Eastern team. You don't really care too much. You take it and run. But then that's kind of like, well, the Whitecaps feel like they kind of graduated past that stage. So that's why it's definitely tough because you can feel the sentiment of, oh, yeah, I could see why you'd feel a bit more negative. But ultimately, it just felt like a very meh, blahy match. I guess, you know, you could argue that, hey, at least they got a point out of it. You could also argue these are the sorts of, you know, games that elite teams find a way to win anyway. So definitely, you know, you can make an argument for both. That's, you know, it's a boring answer, diplomatic answer. Again, I'd probably lean more the side of that I felt like this was 2 points dropped just because I agreed, like, look, these are the sorts of games that you should win. But I think what was maybe the kind of split was, even though they dropped 2 points, there wasn't anything egregious where I'm like, ooh, that's a big, big red flag heading into the year. This is something they really need to watch out for. It was kind of things like, look, they struggled to get their front three involved in the game. That was a bit of a worry. You wanted to see a bit more from Ryan Gold, but we know what he can do when he's at his best, and it was far from his best game. So, you know, you only know that will be going one direction. Yes, defensively, there's some hairy moments, but at the same time, they kept the XG low. They only allowed 7 shots. The only problem was those seven, 5 of them ended up on target. But like, for the most part, there's a lot of like little good things that I think were encouraging, but it's just, yeah, the overall perception of the result, I could understand why it does feel like a loss, even if, you know, you sit back. It wasn't actually that bad in reality.
And I think that's contextual because of the big crowd, because of the anticipation, because of the positivity that, you know, comes after last season, right? That, as you said, I think if this is 3 years ago, you probably take that result and you say, great, we're off to a start. There's a point in the board, but that's not, you know, people have had a taste of success, 2 Canadian championships, being a legitimate playoff team. And now all of a sudden, you know, you want a 2-0 or a 3-1 win on opening day. And so when that is not delivered, when the style of football isn't particularly, I mean, that wasn't a great match to watch just from like an aesthetic perspective. So I can understand why there's some frustration there. I mean, I think for me, Alex, something I was thinking to myself in the first 30 minutes of that match was this was a really good shift put in by Dean Smith in terms of the tactics, really funneled the Whitecaps into wide areas, forced Javane Brown and Ryan Raposo to be on the ball a lot, kind of took the distribution of Ranko Veselinovic and Tristan Blackman out of the match as much as they could. They either had to send it out to those wingback spots or they had to hoof it long, and then the Whitecaps weren't having any joy in holdup play. And so, you know, just kind of took away Vancouver's best stuff. You know, you want to get Kubas, Vite on the ball, moving it up the pitch, get White and Gold in transition. And Charlotte didn't really allow any of that. They were also, we talked about in our preview how, I don't want to say negative they were, but how, you know, they weren't super keen to hold on to the ball even at home in their opener. And yet in the first 30 minutes of this match, it was like, okay, you want us to hold possession, we'll hold possession. Kind of, you know, taking taking what Vancouver was expecting against them and kind of flipping that script on them. So, you know, I thought they had a couple nice tactical wrinkles to start out the match. It took Vancouver a while to adjust. You do wonder, I mean, it's a bit of a sports talk radio take, but you wonder if Vanni Sartini's on the touchline. Are they able to respond to that a little bit quicker? I don't know. But, you know, really overall, past that point, there obviously there was the big Capetti chance that Takaoka made a great save, but really from minute 30 onwards, the Vancouver Whitecaps were the better team, and I think they, you know, they showed at least glimpses of the style of football they can play, being dominating in possession, you know, creating good chances, and just kind of, you know, that overwhelming style we saw at times last season really have a lot of success offensively. There were glimpses of that in the final 60 plus minutes, but it took too long to start for Vancouver. And then even when it did get going, I think for me, the thing that was the only thing really out of this match that was like truly a bit, I don't want to say concerning, but created some concerns, was just Krylak in the mix in that front three and whether there's enough athleticism and movement off the ball there for the Whitecaps to create the kind of space they need to attack in a dynamic and dangerous way. I think that's something that, you know, other teams are going to key in on and try to, you know, prevent that front three from getting on the ball. And they did a really good job. Like White and Krylak had very little possession, very few touches. And, you know, when you're not getting the ball in dangerous areas, you're not getting the ball at all, then it's difficult to be dynamic and effective. And, you know, even for Ryan Gault, this wasn't a particularly effective match. So as much as the stuff at the back, I mean, I think with Matias Laborda back in the mix, they'll be a little bit sharper. That looked like a little bit more like rust or just, you know, maybe not a great performance on the defensive side. Whereas on the offensive end of the pitch, I feel like there's maybe something a little bit more in terms of like squad makeup, the right mix that I feel might be a concern that they have to address.
Yeah, and I think lots of good points to go from there. I think to kind of go to that point of offense, another big thing that would stand out to me with Krylak was just really his deployment. I can't say I was the biggest fan of how he was deployed, because it felt like a lot of times he was always back to goal with the defender right on him. And he was always just playing as a nine. And I think we kind of mentioned it in the lead up. We're like, look, this Charlotte team's expected to sit deep. We weren't sure if it was a 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, ends up being a 4-2-3-1. Extremely disciplined and organized, that must be said. Like, again, Dean Smith, hat tip to the midfielders, you know, like Junior Urso putting in a big shift, you know, Ashley Westwood, that midfield pivot, the pressing of Vargas, Tavares, De Jager as well in the midfield. Like they were in sync. That's how they created the first goal too, just by being so compact, forcing the Whitecaps wide, forcing the vertical ball the Whitecaps don't want to play up from their fullbacks, and boom, it was in back of the net a few passes later. And I think, yeah, what was a bit frustrating was with Krylak's deployment. It just, you know, we kind of mentioned in the lead up, we saw this coming from Charlotte. We said, look, Krylak makes sense because if he and Gold can drop, combined with Vitae and Kubas, kind of overload that three in midfield with a four almost, right? Like get a little more sort of just options in possession. We felt that was a way to break it out. Because if not, if you're going to ask Krylak just to hold the line and play as a nine, get Fafapiko on there. He can stretch the field. He's got the speed, right? He's got someone where if you're going to ask him just to play the nine and you're not expecting him to get a lot of touches, you're better off stretching the field, at least offering that threat of, oh, well, you know, you're pressing us there. We might just go vertical to Pico. And I think it was telling that when he came on, the game really opened up. It really stretched out, especially when you had him, Ahmed, and Johnson. It was just a bit unfortunate that it came a little too late because, again, tactically, I think Krylak, that's why I don't want to pretend and be like, oh, it's the wrong choice, because we were saying it before. I had Krylak in my projected lineup. I think that was the right call. It was just the deployment of Krylak, of a player like him. You want the ball at his feet facing the other team's goal. That's where he's so dangerous with his, you know, ability to score, pick out a final pass. You don't want him back to goal or stretching defenses. That's not his game, especially not at this age. And I think it was, I was a bit disappointed that, again, he had 23 touches. someone like Krylak, I want pushing 40, 50, 60 because you want him to get involved in the game, really be linking up with Gald. And it more felt like deployment. Maybe, who knows, maybe Krylak was, I was also on Krylak, but it just felt like the way he was deployed wasn't as effective. And that played right into Charlotte's hands for those that first half, especially, right? Like, because it just allowed them to press, and the Whitecaps, they couldn't play that ball into the middle to Vitek Kubas, because it felt like Charlotte was always able to, you know, they were outnumbering the Whitecaps in midfield a lot, it felt like, with their three. They were doing a good job of closing out width, and it just kind of left the Whitecaps with no ideas other than pass it at the back. And even then, it was just like, you could tell they were a bit surprised. I thought an interesting comment from D'Agostino's, because I asked him after the game, one of the questions I asked him was, just kind of, what did you see on the goal? Because I was very curious, because what I saw as well is that when I think Tristan Blackman had the ball at left center back, he had a wide open Kubas to play into, and he didn't want to go for it, didn't see it. I don't know if he felt like Charlotte was just going to press Kubas and it was going to be a waste. But then Charlotte kind of guided him to the left. He played Raposo. Raposo did also have Kubas in the pocket. He also didn't see it. He goes up the line, and it was just like kind of what happened there. I thought it was interesting because D'Agostino, his breakdown of it was he felt that Ranko and Blackman, because in this game they're playing more before building up with Ranko and Blankman, Blackman, Jesus, mixing up names, building from the CBs. And he said tactically they're supposed to be a lot more patient. Like, if there's nothing, go back and forth, especially Charlotte. They never, their press was triggered as soon as it hit the fullback. So D'Agostino, it was interesting, actually. He said he was a bit annoyed at Blackman and Ranko, and like in that sort of situation, because Blackman put an early ball to Raposo. That triggered the press. That kind of forces Raposo into a poor decision, you know, because he's got a guy pressing on him, and it just led down to the breakdown. Whereas if the Whitecaps just kept playing, it's nil-nil. Killed the game, forced Charlotte to step up, forced Charlotte to be aggressive. Yet it kind of shows that between the Krylak deployment, between that intricacy in their buildup, they were doing a lot to make the game easier for Charlotte in the first 45. And it wasn't until too late that we got guys like Johnson, Ahmed, Pico, who really made that defense look uncomfortable and opened up the game and gave the Whitecaps a chance at winning late on.
Yeah, I mean, I would co-sign all of that. And I would even just add that, you know, something I wish I had seen more is Brian White coming deeper as well, right? We've seen him have really nice moments. Same kind of thing happened there where, you know, he's going back to goal. Now, Brian White can be effective back to goal, but Blackman and Veselinovic were playing these long, hopeful balls. They weren't fantastic. White's, you know, contesting headers, and the Charlotte defensive line did a really nice job kind of snuffing that stuff out. I just feel like, given how passive Charlotte was willing to be, you know, until they were triggered in that press. Yeah, if you just, you know, you bring everyone a little deeper, you sit, you're patient, and you only kind of, you know, launch your attack on the ball when you're kind of in the right position to do so. It feels like the Whitecaps missed the trick a little bit there, because you want, really ultimately, right? Do you want Javane Brown and Ryan Raposo with the ball at their feet, or do you want Kubas, Vite, Gald, White, Krylak? You know, you want those dangerous attacking pieces. I mean, you know, some nice things from Ryan Raposo in this match. I even thought, you know, Javane Brown, it was a bit speculative, but had some solid moments. But ultimately, those are not the players for Vancouver that you're expecting to be your main attacking contributors, right? You want your best players involved. And, you know, really, to just kind of recycle the Krylak comment, it felt like tactically they didn't do quite enough to get all of those guys in the right positions. And, you know, again, I think it was Dean Smith did a really good job setting up his team on the road. They were incredibly organized. So credit has to go to that. But then also, I think the Whitecaps, you know, have to do something this weekend to respond to that. Now, we'll get into it. I don't know if this San Jose team is as organized and as disciplined defensively. It hasn't looked like it through the first 2 weeks. So maybe this is a bit of a get right spot for Vancouver. But Alex, with that, that's a lot of, you know, areas to improve. That's a lot of things that didn't go quite right for the Vancouver Whitecaps. One thing that did go particularly well, probably the man of the match for Vancouver, Yohei Takaoka. He wasn't super busy, but he made one absolutely massive save. point blank, which could have put the Whitecaps down 2-0. And overall, it seemed like a confident, a composed, a just kind of, Yohei had a presence back there that I think was really nice to see. So a very good start to year two for the Japanese keeper. I think that was maybe a nice unexpected surprise of match one.
Yeah, I think that was a huge positive because he did what you want out of him from a goalkeeper. I really struggled to put any ounce of blame for him on the first goal. Just like Yuri Tavares had a shot right on the top between the six and the top of the 18. He was not going to miss that. It would have taken it something spectacular to stop that. And then, yeah, look, a 1-0 game. I think if Copetti scores that, the Whitecaps lose. Like it was just like the way Charlotte was defending. You couldn't imagine them giving up two goals on the day. So for Takaoka to come out and make a commanding save like that, it's what you want from your keeper. That's what you need sometimes, those moments where it was such a simple defensive breakdown too, where Charlotte went long, Ranko Veselinovic misjudged the ball in the air. The ball gets past him. Copetti gets a chance. Player that magnitude, you expect him to score. But that's what you need from a Takaoka sometimes, where he stepped up when he needed to. He was otherwise solid, did his job. I think that was a above average goalkeeping performance. And I think that's key because, as we said, if he can take that step from last year at times in the overall balance, it was average. I feel like a performance like this was, again, above average is just the baseline. I'd agree with you. I'd say it was pretty darn good. I think above average is just more terminology, right? And I think that's what you want from him, is these games where he can come up and make a big save or two. Because, look, that's something that, I just, to use a quote from Vanni Sartini that he used over in the lead up to the game, he's like, look, we have a way we want to defend. Mistakes will happen. If mistakes didn't happen, like, it wouldn't be soccer. Sometimes you need your goalkeeper to step up with a big save when those mistakes do happen. Because again, it wasn't tactically, there's not much to say about a long ball. Your center back misses it, guy gets a break. Right? I think it's about as just as simple of a tactical, little error, I guess, as you can be. But you want Takaoka to step up. And yeah, that's huge. And I think can go a long way because, look, I don't know. I don't know if this is just me, but I feel like through three games now, and it's funny to say because they haven't kept a clean sheet in any of the three, but I think they've looked really good defensively in all three. Like, again, it feels like the goals they've allowed have just been individual errors or little turnovers, things that they can clean up. Whereas it feels like the structure they're in right now actually is like, it's been a good balance. And I thought statistically that was the case. Like, I think it was something like their XG they allowed was around 1.05. And I was like, yes, it was a high amount of XG per shot. It was like 0.20, which is very high. It's not good, but most of that came from Ranko's mistake or the Raposo turnover that led to the goal. I think another one of their chances as well was like a flicked on header right on top of the six. Like, for the most part, they kept their other chances out. They defended in good structure. And I think that's a big positive because I think we can safely assume the offense should figure things out once they get their matchups, their pairings. You get a hot Ryan Gold and Brian White, like those stuff will come. Whereas the defense was the big issue. And I think it's kind of flown under the radar with the results that, the defending, at least in my opinion, I feel like has been pretty good.
As you outlined, I think a big shift from last season is that last season there were genuine concerns about, like, tactically, is this setup good enough? There were holes at times that were really exposed. And yeah, so far through three matches, I think it comes down mostly to little individual moments. As you said, it's like the Copetti chance is just Ranko missing the ball, slipping. The goal is Blackman's distribution, and then Ryan Raposo's passing choice. They get punished for it. But other than that, not a lot of high-quality chances conceded. So, like you, I think I was impressed overall with the tactical setup and, maybe need slightly better performances from those defenders. But I don't feel like the backbone there of how they're defending is necessarily flawed. I mean, I guess for me, just kind of like down the leaderboard, so to speak, for the rest of this match, Ali Ahmed and Fafapiko off the bench, I think positive signs. You wonder, transitioning, kind of looking ahead to San Jose, do both of those guys get a chance to start down in San Jose on the weekend? you know, the Whitecaps will be keen, obviously, to have Matias Laborda back as well. Something we did miss on the last podcast totally escaped my mind, the Laborda suspension from last year. So, you know, mea culpa, apologies for that, but we move on. And then, you know, it wasn't a great first half from Andres Kubas and Pedro Vite, but I thought that those two really grew into the match as it went on. And particularly like Kubas in the second half, both getting involved physically, kind of harassing that midfield for Charlotte that had been doing quite well, and then playing some field switching, some line breaking balls as well. Kubas has that in the locker. He doesn't always use it, but there were a couple nice moments from him in this match. So I guess those are the other guys to me that kind of stood out and had at least, you know, somewhat noteworthy performances.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair across the board. I think, you know, we highlighted Takaoka. Look, center backs, maybe not the greatest showing. Raposo Brown, you know, I thought I'd agree with you, like you said earlier, in the on the ball contributions versus maybe some of what we saw, you know, but even off the ball, since the Whitecaps defended well, you can only say that they did their job. So I think maybe they as well could get a little praise in it, despite, you know, maybe having people having mixed views on their performances, given some of the actual offensive output. But hey, Raposo found the net with an absolute missile of a shot that just he fooled the heck out of Kalina with the 100-mile-an-hour rocket from inside the box. But yeah, I think definitely getting Vite and Kubas more into the game as it went on, it helped, right? It just got the game opened up. Once they start breaking the lines, it shows that has to be the strategy. Get those two involved, because it feels like really at the moment they're kind of the heartbeat of the team. It feels like when you get Kubas and Vite in rhythm in the ball, the team just follows, right? Like, of course, Gald feels like the lungs, right? Like, you're not getting them the ball, the team's not breathing, the team's not fully functional. But like, again, it feels like the one who's gonna pump the blood to the heart, right? It's the guys like Vite, it's the guys like Kubas, just getting ticking in midfield. And I think that helped a lot. So I think hopefully we can just see them grow this partnership, and also the Whitecaps figure out best ways to get them involved. I think one thing that was telling, for example, is that they were building up in a bit of a 4-3-2-1 that Vanni Sartini said we'll probably see a lot more of this season. You know, and there's a little tactical talk that some of us were lucky enough to be able to listen to. He mentioned the 4-3-2-1, but I think a big part of that is a third midfielder, and he outlined it. It looks like Ali Ahmed's really, you know, highlighted to be that third midfielder. And I think that's important, because especially in the first half, Schopf, you know, to his credit, I think he was like, it was a competent game. I think it was probably the best way to describe it, in the sense that, like, maybe it was just because there's this huge worry, oh, he's playing at wing back, he's going to get torched. I thought that was far from the case. But also, there were times in possession where he wasn't there. Right? Like, that's the best way to describe it. Like, he just didn't feel like he was there. And as soon as Ali Ahmed came on, he was on the pitch for 12 minutes. You felt he was there. And I think that'll be something that'll help Vite and Kubas, that if they're building up in this 4-3-2-1 shape, that, man, if they have Ahmed alongside them, it's going to make their lives a lot easier. And I think, you know, his presence later on in the game definitely helped a lot. So hopefully I would bet he only goes 30 or 40 this week, which is fine. Build them up slowly. Don't rush him back in. But I think it's exciting to think that as soon as, you know, maybe even RSL, I guess, RSL by the end of the month, or I guess, you know, Dallas, that he might be in shape to go 90 again and get that trio going. But I thought that's maybe a bit of what Vite and Kubas missed as well.
Yeah, obviously that's kind of like the ideal mix. You have the Kubas, the defensive solidarity, Vite, just like the on ball, the talent and skill, and Ahmed, the motor that can just do a bit of everything. So I like that mix. I can see why Vanni Sartini is salivating about having that long term. And yeah, hopefully we see another good shift from Ali this upcoming weekend. Something to watch out for as well. Sam Adekubi, first full training session, I think today, which is for those listening, it's Wednesday of this week. So nice to see Sam back involved, obviously taking a little bit longer than somewhat to hope for, but you know, with knees and stuff like that, it's obviously prudent to take a cautious approach. So, you know, pushing closer and closer to Adekubi and Ahmed obviously make a big difference to the way this system's going to work in the long term. So it's something to watch out for. Going to have to be a little bit patient in that respect. Alex, any final like direct thoughts about the Charlotte match? Obviously, we're going to maybe talk some tactical tweaks for this upcoming weekend when we preview San Jose, but does that cover it for Charlotte?
That's pretty much that's the gist of the match, I'd say, right? A bit of good, bit of bad, some adjustments to help them at the end. They get a draw.
I don't think it's one worth overthinking or spending too much time. Listen, it wasn't ideal. It was your prototypical 5.5 or 6 out of 10 performance. They got a point. Now it's time to move on to the next match and just kind of go from there. Now, a couple news and notes on the Whitecaps front that aren't match related. The first being JC Ngondo. The first Whitecaps, main squad player to be loaned out. He's loaned out to Las Vegas Lights. Alex, I mean, I don't have super detailed thoughts other than this seems like a perfect move for the player. He's probably at that like MLS sub contributor standard. However, there's just not a ton of minutes in the midfield attacking midfield type position that Ngondo plays. He's an international, which creates some roster congestion. This is just one where the player needs minutes. If he wants to, become a regular in MLS, he's just going to have to play and continue his development process. So to me, this seems like a perfect move. And, he's also at the level, I think the level in the age where MLS Next Pro doesn't make a lot of sense anymore. Right. So I think this totally makes a ton of sense, and glad to see JC get a move in the short term, and then hopefully maybe he can come back and provide a little bit for the Whitecaps in the long term.
Yeah, look, and I think the biggest takeaway from this, because other than it's a no-brainer move. He needs minutes. He's not playing. I think this is one where it's a win-win move, because either he goes and shines at, he goes and shines at Las Vegas. If he's good enough and you bring him back next year, great. If this increases his value for a sale elsewhere, great. If he struggles, at least you kind of know. I think his contract is only guaranteed through the rest of this year, which, again, by the way, shout out to the Whitecaps. The day before the season started, they put out a complete roster with everyone's contracts, including option years, as well as their designation on the roster. I just wanted to give that a shout out, because I think along with Atlanta, they're one of the only teams in the league to do this. And it makes a huge difference in terms of analyzing the team. And I think that's the big thing with this Ngondo point, this move, that I think, especially now that we know the state of this roster, they entering the start of the year, they had one international spot available to them. Of course, you can always trade for more. They also had two senior roster spots and about three or four supplemental roster spots. Of course, Ngondo going doesn't free up a senior spot. He was on the supplemental roster, but he's an international. So they now have two international spots. And that's definitely some, I think that's really the big news for me out of all this, because of course, before the weekend, not only did we get a bit of a tactical talk from Vanni Sartini that, again, I will try my best to at least put nuggets of it into the analysis, like him mentioning the 4-3-2-1 and Ali Ahmed's role and whatnot. I mean, again, when Sam Adekugbe comes back, we can talk about that a little more. So we'll continue to spread nuggets. But we also got to talk to Axel Schuster, and, a lot of interesting comments. A lot of the main theme asked of him was third DP, like what's happened to third DP. He was kind of just non-committal to the idea. So I kind of following up on that, I asked him like, okay, what about the U22s? Because if you think about it, it's been a couple of years. They had that rush in the first year. They signed Vitae, and then they signed Kyle, and they signed Caicedo all within like 6 months of each other. And then since then, they haven't signed anyone, right? Like Vitae's turned into a great MLS impact. Schuster said that Vitae for him has been playing like a DP. I think that's a fair analysis. But then we've seen Kyle not play, go on loan, net the Whitecaps pretty healthy fee, though, it must be said. And then Caicedo on loan. So I kind of asked him, like, okay, you obviously, you weren't committing to the idea of a DP. This summer, you have a big decision with Caicedo, because from what it sounds like, he has a guaranteed, or they have a buy option, but they're not it's not a guaranteed one. So in Colombia, Schuster, he thinks they'll activate it, but there is a chance he does. He comes back. So I kind of asked him, like, do you plan to bring back a Caicedo and just bring another U22? Do you plan to sell a Caicedo and get a third DP? Because then you could get a third DP if you get rid of a second U22. Or do you sell Caicedo and get two U22s? And from what it sounded like, he was very much a lot more on the idea of getting two U22s. What he said about Dyber is, look, it sounds like they love him there. They have the option. That's what I expect. But if Dyber comes back, we're happy to have him. Great player. We thought last year before his injury, he was in a great moment. But I think the U22 thing is very interesting because with Ngando leaving, they now have they have two internationals. If Caicedo goes, they could have two U22 spots. That would, two plus two, you can kind of do the math of, oh, there might be some U22 recruitment on the way this summer, which I think is very important to note.
Yeah, I think there was, even in the kind of Twitter buzz that followed from Axel's comments, there was a lot of focus on that designated player spot. A lot of people that, the focus has been on a DP striker, right? And it seems very clear that that's not necessarily the way that Axel Schuster is looking to go. And I think it makes sense because you have at least what this, Vanni Sartini and Axel Schuster believes to be their core group, their spine here. It's about adding those complementary pieces that can push it over the top. And yeah, if you're able to find U22 internationals that you really like, that you've been targeting for 6, 9, 12 months, kind of monitoring their progress, now you have the spots, you have the space. If you're able to inject them into the lineup in the summer, that could just be the push this club needs to really take that next step. So, I have faith in, at least in the short term, that, at least it feels like there's a coherent plan, right? It might not be what an armchair sporting director wants to see, but they have their targets, they have their plan. It sounds like they're committed to that and they're committed to executing that. And I think as long as the vision's clear, I don't have a problem with it. And I think you made this point to me privately, but I thought it was a very good one, so I'll share it here. This is a club that's no longer thinking window to window. They're thinking 2-3 windows out in terms of who do we want? How do we assemble the squad? How do we, use the spots and all the machinations of the MLS roster to get to where we want to go? And it feels like they're doing that again here. So, that might be a little bitter to taste in the short term, the fact that they didn't make a splashy signing this offseason, but I think it could pay off come August, September.
Yeah, and I think the U22 thing makes sense because to another point, to keep diving into that Axel conversation, one another thing he mentioned is people ask, like, oh yeah, DP striker, what could you see? And he said, look, this was a comment that I know people have very mixed opinions on, and understandably so. Axel Schuster said Brian White for us was a DP striker. I think, that comment obviously... it's one where in production, because the way Schuster was phrasing it is, look, he scored the third most goals in MLS last year for us. That's DP value. Everyone around him was a DP. Some people also argue he misses a lot of chances. That's maybe not DP quality. And I think that you can also make that valid argument. But I think what was interesting is that he noted that, look, Brian White, call him the DP striker killer, because he's already had two DP strikers. In a Lucas Cavallini, that was there. That's a DP striker, a $5 million striker. What happened? Brian White won the spot. Lucas Cavallini moves on. You bring in a Sergio Cordova, same situation, another DP striker. What happens? Last man standing ends up being Brian White. Axel kind of mentioned that, look, that's taught us a lot of, it's great that Brian keeps doing that, but it's from their perspective, it's like, why would you do it a third time? And so far the track record is, oh, Brian White can outperform these DP strikers. He can fit the system better. And what he said is, because of that and just the way the squad is built, he sees the best way of improving the squad. And it's why it kind of explains some of the moves they did in the winter, is either bringing in vets, guys like Krylak, Pico, right? Guys who come in. And he said Krylak in the discussion was course, I'm a professional. I want to start every game, but given my age, given the team, I know I might not start every game, and I'm okay with that. I'm going to do my best to do that. Ditto with Pico, right? They're at that stage in the career where they're not 27-year-olds like, I want to play every week or I'll go find somewhere that does it. They kind of know the importance of managing. So he said, look, we want guys like that, guys who can come and bring quality, but not do that. Or on the flip side of it, we want youngsters. We want guys who, like Pedro Vite, when he came in 2021, you know, he was figuring a lot out. He was yet to play the second team. He didn't really know the system tactically. He was struggling with the speed of play. But over time, he just got better and better and better and better. And he knocked a door down. Ali Ahmed, right, from the second team. Ditto. He just kept knocking on doors and then eventually won a spot. He mentioned that he feels with this group of guys they have, especially when they have a core guy of Golds and Whites and Adekugbes and Kubases, he feels that they've got enough core pieces now where they're better served investing in younger guys, you know, who will try to go for a Vite route, and maybe they're not right away coming in and knocking down the doors, but they have the potential, and over time it happens. And I think that's interesting because, look, I think there's always room for a DP striker in the squad. That's where I would disagree slightly. But also, if you're telling me you could get a Vite-like profile at striker, you could get a Vite-like profile, I don't know, maybe in center back or maybe another one in midfield or heck, wing back, right? We've been talking a lot about wing back. It wouldn't be the worst idea to get a U22 signing at that position. I would understand the process there. So I thought that comment was very interesting. It kind of flew under the radar because I ended up asking Axel a lot of these questions at the end of the whole discussion. And, kind of at that point, just a couple of us were still there because it was like an hour and a half discussion. Some people had to leave. So I thought that was interesting.
I think for me, in terms of roster construction, the one kind of remaining question is who's going to be that consistent secondary threat in attack? Because you had Julian Gressel at the beginning of last season that was playing at like sort of team MVP levels. He moves on. You bring in Larea and Adekugbe. Larea is kind of trying to fill that Gressel role. It works to varying degrees of success. But nonetheless, like Larea or Gressel, these are guys you have to plan for and worry about tactically, right? When you're Dean Smith, hypothetically, if Gressel or Larea is on the roster, you have to game plan for that. You can't just game plan for White and Gold, right? Krylak maybe could come in and be that guy at times. Pico, okay, in some respects. But I think that's my question going forward, or my, not concern, but just something that I think is yet to be answered is, you know, who can be that consistent secondary threat that takes a bit of that pressure off of White and Gold. I think Krylak can be that guy if deployed correctly, but then that's maybe where these potential U22 initiative players come in. Or also does an Ali Ahmed, the Ali Ahmed and Pedro Vite thing, do they grow into the kind of players that teams have to really game plan around and, you know, try to shut down on a consistent basis? I think that's the one respect in which this Whitecaps team, it's still a little bit up in the air, and that'll depend on how this team plays in the first half of this season and who they're able to sign in the summer to really fully answer that question.
Yeah, but I like the idea of that forward being a U22 player, because I think, again, that would make a lot of sense to bet on that sort of potential. And what would be nice is that, yeah, I guess you go for those two U22 players. You know, just assume again, Caicedo's gone. Based on what we've seen, I think that, again, if you get that at wing back and get that at striker or forward or attack, yeah, and then you still have some flexibility that you can get a U23 DP, of course. Unless they clear out any internationals, it would have to be domestic, or you get, you know, a max TAM DP, which is what the situation they're in anyways right now. I think that's also something that flew under the radar, that Andreas Kubas's raise has pushed him to a full DP, so that, you know, him and Gold are the two full DPs, which along with the U22s actually limits them to get a third actual full proper DP, which is something that Schuster also made sure to note, because, you know, there's a lot of chatter of, oh, Whitecaps have a DP spot. Well, it's like, actually, now Kubas, before he came in at max TAM, but I guess his contract pushed him just over that threshold. So yeah, definitely the flexibility would be there at the U22s. And again, I think it'll be interesting to see who they target, right? Is it going to be more Vite? Can they get a more of a Vite out of this, or is it going to be a Kyo where it's just things don't work out, even though you can see the potential, or ditto with the Caicedo where things were working out in an injury? Of course, you never know those sorts of things, but I don't know. I like the U22 profile idea. So I thought that was interesting, especially now that we see a move where, look, you have two senior spots open, two international spots. I think like that makes a lot of sense if those two spots ended up being U22s, right? Like it makes too much sense almost for that to be the case. So I guess keep an eye, right? That's all we can do is keep an eye, because I think that's kind of, yeah, like we've said, the missing pieces on this team, especially if Utvik can be that center back option. I thought it was interesting. Axel Schuster spoke really highly of Bilal Halbouni, and so did Vanni Sertini this weekend. They see him as someone who can be a ball, like they're really impressed with his ball playing ability. They're impressed with a lot of his games. So I think they really see him fitting into the system long term. So if you assume that, you assume Inge Utvik, all of a sudden they have five, six center backs too, if you're counting someone like Jervain Brown who can play there, seven if you can count Martins Adekugbe. All of a sudden there's options there. It's just, okay, can you shore up that fullback? Can you shore up that forward position? But hey, if you have two U22 spots, I think that would be a pretty darn good way to do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something we're gonna have to track throughout, the rest of this early season stage, and then into the summer, we'll see what happens. And I think winning can solve a lot of this stuff. So if the Whitecaps are playing well, there'll be less of a spotlight on it. All right. Well, that kind of wraps up at least the backwards looking Vancouver Whitecaps discussion. But before we look forward to this weekend, we're going to dive back into our Around the MLS in 5 minutes segment. Alex, for me, I mean, in terms of at least player of the match day voting, for better or worse, begrudgingly, this was an Inter Miami week. Luis Suarez, I mean, that, showing off what a complete striker, what was an absolute world-class striker at times. He doesn't have the legs anymore, but he's still got a lot of the instincts and the skills. Really just took over that match against Orlando City. And Miami was cruising away to victory reasonably comfortably. Then for me, something else, as a Canadian, I love a snow game. RSL, LAFC, especially seeing LAFC suffer and struggle in the snow. There was something particularly satisfying about that. Hugo Lloris not particularly enjoying the elements, as well as the LAFC defenders, as that's what Andres Gomez scored a brace and looked otherworldly in that match. For a guy from Colombia, he wasn't too distracted by the elements whatsoever. He looked right at home.
Or Chicho Arango with the goal and the snow angel after, too, another
Exactly.
Colombian.
No, those guys in RSL, they're ready for prime time. They obviously trained it early in the season. So yeah, they were ready for that one. I guess those are the two matches that really stood out to me. I mean, we talked about the Canadian teams a little bit, but yeah, Luis Suarez was my player of the match week, and then the RSL player who now I'm blanking on, despite
Gomez.
having Exactly, Gomez, despite having just said his name, that was my secondary vote. So yeah, those are the two big matches, at least for me, from match week three of MLS action.
Yeah, it was pretty similar. I mean, look, Luis Suarez had an absurd game. Two goals, two assists. He had that bite in front of goal that he was lacking the week prior, where his knees were looking a bit shoddy. Just they got the right injection in there and got him playing up to full speed. So yeah, definitely wasn't a surprise. Messi was doing Messi things. Like Miami's, again, they got that potential to do that. And I think this is huge for them because they're banking points early, right? Like, because with them, the huge issue is going to be depth, especially when Copa hits and like feels like half their team could go to Copa with how, the strong Latino influence of that they're attracting with some of these players. At least no Messi's going to be gone among those names. So banking points early is good for them. I went Suarez, two goals, two assists, spoke for itself. My secondary pick, I went a bit different. I'm always trying to give love to defenders and goalies. And hey, I'll tip my cap to him. I haven't always been the biggest fan of that signing over at TFC, but I went for Sean Johnson. He had a very good game, kept a clean sheet. TFC, I think, the only team to keep to not concede yet this season out of the 29 teams. By the way, fun fact, I was realizing this before the show because, like, jokes, I was like, let's see how far the Whitecaps are to the playoff race. Everyone in the league has dropped points so far this season. It's been two match days.
It's wide open, certainly in the West. And then, yeah, I mean, TFC, the fact that they're, you know, undefeated, haven't conceded a goal through two match days, like, stands out as a top performance because it really has been quite level so far.
Yeah, well, I just think that, wow, 29 teams, two match days, everyone's already dropped a point. Like, everyone's at least a drawn or lost a game. Like, there isn't a single team that sits there. We've won all of our games. So, yeah, definitely TFC because of that. One of the most impressive teams. Two games on the road. They go away to Cincy last week. Look very competent defensively. Get a 0-0 draw this time. They look very competent defensively again. But a few moments broke down. Sean Johnson came up with some massive saves. So credit to him. I wasn't always the, you know, biggest proponent of that signing with TFC, but I think that those are the kinds of games he's shown he can do in the past that just weren't there last year. And maybe this is also a sign of John Herdman. Like, it just felt like he didn't fit in Bob Bradley's system, or it feels like John Herdman, again, that's his specialty as a coach, it appears. He knows how to make the most out of what he's got, right? Like, he seems to get the Italians bought in. He's figured out that Davy Flores is the answer to tie everything together in the midfield. He signed a million center backs and he's got them humming. So definitely know from the Whitecaps perspective, they won't be too pleased to see that. But hey, all this could mean, along with Montreal starting with 4 points from two road games, that we could have a very, very, very competitive Canadian championship, and that you'd want to hope that they play each other in the semifinals, giving the Whitecaps a bit of a free reign. Because yeah, two-legged series all of a sudden with TFC or Montreal, it just doesn't look like it could be a straight-up good time that it might have, you know, just months ago. So that's a credit to those Canadian teams. Definitely kept an eye on that and gave. So far, it's funny. It's the symmetry, I guess, of in week one, I gave Jonathan Sirwa my shout, one of my shouts for player of the match day. Now this way, I give Sean Johnson. So definitely a lot of love for the Canadian goalkeepers so far. But yeah, otherwise, there was some interesting games this week. I think another one I tucked into, as I said I would, was Minnesota-Columbus. And that one ended up being very entertaining. Minnesota surprised Columbus a lot. They were able to really shut them down after it looked like Columbus was going to run away early. And man, Minnesota had such a fun ending with the Canadian striker, Tanny Oluwaseyi, scoring an absolutely beautiful goal. My jaw dropped when I saw he went for it and scored. It was like no angle, ripped at far post, 94th minute equalizer. Yeah, that was a very good game that I was happy to dive into.
Minnesota might be sneaky this season in the Western Conference. Not a team I would have expected to sort of threaten or vault up the standings, but through two matches, you know, match day three again, but through two match days in all reality, looking pretty decent. I think one that was surprising a little bit for me, and that, you know, we heaped some praise on Portland last week, but it's been of a little bit of a slow start for Seattle. Obviously lost to LAFC and then a 0-0 draw with Austin, which you have to think, given Seattle's stature, that's a disappointment. Pedro de la Vega as well, apparently out 6 to 8 weeks. That's tough.
That's very tough.
Especially he's looking good right off the bat, and obviously lots of expectations in Seattle. And then, yeah, I mean, you already touched on the two Canadian teams. I don't know if two Canadian teams other than the Vancouver Whitecaps, I don't know if either of them are playing like amazing football to watch, but they're finding a way to get results at the moment. And yeah, Sean Johnson, I saw some of those player of the week votings and I was like, oh, seriously? I had to go back and watch. And hey, full credit, he made some tight, you know, well inside the six, right, you know, right up against them, and made some great reaction saves. And TFC was some exciting moments of individual brilliance in that match as well. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that sustains once we're 8 to 10 match weeks in. I don't know if I'm ready to, you know, crown CF Montreal and TFC like legit contenders in the East just yet. But at least showing good early signs.
Yeah, look, I think it's far too early, but I think the big thing is they're playing with a lot of structure right now, both of them, and they both made, in my opinion, very good coaching hires. Like Laurent Courtois, just you look at his pedigree, you're very intrigued. Ditto John Herdman, in the sense that, yeah, you could argue all you want about will he be ready for the club game. I've said it many times. I just feel like that's so overblown, the same way it was overblown. You know, how is he going to go from women's to men's? You know, it's, again, it's coaching. If you're a good coach, you're a good coach. And I think it's really telling that they have such good structure. So I think that's intriguing for both of them because, for example, it felt like Losada last year, like they just, even when they were having good moments, it just always felt like something was off with Montreal. Whereas, look, this Montreal roster is pretty good. Like they've gotten a good amount of depth across the board. Sirois, for my money, one of the best keepers in MLS, it feels like. Joel Waterman's grown a lot in the middle of that back three. Gabriele Corbo has actually like quietly been having a really good like last 6 to 10 months. I was going through goals added on the American analysis and his name popped up, which isn't surprising because he's been so good by the eye test. Like they've got some good pieces in midfield, MLS or All-Star in Chouinard in the middle. Like you got some names up front. Like this is that Montreal team has a good core. So I think the big thing is, the structure, right? And I think that and TFC as well, that's going to give them an edge that, yeah, maybe look, they're not a contender in the sense they might not finish top three, top five in the East, but these points they're getting now, neither of them were getting last year. And I think that's what could put them both in the playoff mix by year end. But of course, we'll have to see. Really, otherwise, to kind of round things off, just from the games, a couple interesting results in the West. St. Louis beat a very bad looking New York City team. Man, that New York City team looks not so good. And credit to St. Louis, because look, they're dealing with Champions Cup. They were eliminated, but credit to them for bouncing back, getting a win on the board at home. Otherwise, LA Galaxy, we'll dive into this game a bit more shortly because they beat the Whitecaps' next opponent, San Jose, 3-1 in a commanding Cali Clasico win. So won't say too much there, but Joseph Paintsill looks like a great signing. Dejan Jovalich, can he continue his form as a starter finally with no Chicharito? And of course, Ricky Puig doing Ricky Puig things. So lots to watch there. And the last one, because I actually watched this game, Colorado-Nashville. A lot of interesting characters in that one. I want to watch Moise Bombido. From a Canadian perspective, he looked great. I've actually written about him for Peace on One Soccer. I'm very excited about what I saw there. But yeah, a lot of fun players in that one. It was a 1-1 draw in the end. Comical own goal, by the way, from Nashville. Like it was like a floated cross into the six. Shaq Moore was uncontested and he like headed it post and in into his own net. Like it baffled me. I genuinely started laughing out loud when it happened. So like watch that again if you want to laugh. Then it's funny because Colorado is in such control. Terrible corner into the box. Like Jonathan Lewis, who had just come on, was like standing at the top of the penalty spot. No one around him, like on a defensive corner. Terrible corner comes to him. It hit his hand. Like there was literally, he wasn't even like jostling with the guy to try to like, you know, and it accidentally hit his hand. His hand was just out and it hit him. And there was no one around him. Penalty, Nashville ties it up. So it's a really funny game in that regard. But there's some interesting players to keep an eye on. I think just to highlight some, because, you know, it's always important to highlight individuals we don't see much of. That Connor Ronan guy that the Colorado signed, he was playing at Wolves before, 25-year-old midfielder. He might be one of the best in MLS. Like, I was really impressed watching him. And I just thought that was interesting. Because I'm like, given his pedigree, keep hearing in Colorado, oh, Mihailovic this, Bassett that, all these, you know, new names they've bought in, Stefan, Sam Vines. I think Connor Ronan, I think that's something, a name to keep an eye on in a few months is when we're talking about some guys who are flying under the radar as very, very good MLS midfielders.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Ronan flashed a little bit even against the Whitecaps last season when he came into Colorado. And so, as you said, not the flashy signing that they made this offseason, but one to watch, especially, you know, that second season in MLS, it's guys sometimes make a jump. So that was around the MLS in just a couple of minutes. When we come back, we're going to dive into this upcoming weekend in San Jose and then a couple MLS matchups to watch out for as well. So we'll be back in just a moment.
right, well, diving quickly into the second half of this very Whitecaps and MLS heavy show. Again, lots of fun to dive, of course, into the Whitecaps game, but around MLS. Again, like we mentioned, some of the times on games being a bit more reasonable, it's been nice to tuck into some Saturday morning, Sunday morning games again and just catch up what's going on around the league. And certainly pays off for weeks like this where the Whitecaps get an opponent in San Jose. Of course, the San Jose Earthquakes, bit of a fun one. Both teams celebrating 50th anniversaries. Both teams found in 1974. Both teams with anniversary kits. Hopefully we see that match up, the Whitecaps blue and gold versus San Jose's white classic kit they've gone for. They've put out some fun videos this year. I think San Jose put out a good video about one of the first meetings between the two clubs. Of course, the Whitecaps put out the video of Wee Willie Johnson scoring the corner or drinking the beer from the corner against San Jose, putting in a dime. They score. And of course, that's where Willie's corner, is inspired by. So a lot of history between these clubs, even if we always joke about being the third wheel derby, you know, always the kind of the third fiddle in their respective regions. But then they meet each other and it's just everything comes together. Well, look, should be an interesting matchup. I still remain very high on what the San Jose team can do. I think they made some good signings. You know, that Espinoza, Abobase, core up front is very good. Luchi Gonzalez is the coach. I'm buying those stocks. But so far, hasn't been a great start for Luchi Gonzalez and company. They fell to Dallas 2-1 on opening day. And they got, as we mentioned a bit earlier, got the doors blown off them, kind of, really the best way to say it, against LA. They were just getting torched in transition. And it's a bit surprising because this Luchi Gonzalez sort of style is supposed to be very solid defensively, but they're playing really aggressively with their fullbacks and they're not compensating and covering enough space to make up for it. And it showed against the Galaxy. You cooked them in transition, for lack of a better way to put it. So, I mean, Sam, you got a closer look at this LA game than I did, just course watching the highlights, but kind of what surprised you, what stood out to you about this the San Jose side that the Whitecaps will play away at 7:30 Pacific time on Saturday?
I mean, yeah, exactly what you just said is kind of anti-Luchi ball, right? I mean, you know, Luchi, I think, has his teams generally pretty well organized, pretty disciplined, you know, really solid through the midfield, you know, not a team that wants to, you know, play helter skelter in transition all the time. And yeah, just, you know, 25, 30 yards of open space for LA Galaxy wide players to run into. Paint Sill just, you know, having quite the introduction to MLS, doing whatever he wanted. Ricky Puig arriving late, you know, for shots on target, stuff like that. Obviously, you know, the Galaxy has some talented players, some players that can really punish you. I mean, Pantsil with a tremendous finish on the first LA Galaxy goal, which, you know, is probably like a lower XG chance, but just a nice finish. But yeah, I think whether it's, you know, whether it's Paul Marie at fullback, or I'm blanking really quick, I'll have to take a look at the other player for the Earthquakes that's been playing at fullback. But again, when both those guys get pushed forward, you leave Rodriguez and I think it's Jackson Reagan at the back there. Or no, that's not correct.
That's Seattle.
That's Seattle.
Tanner Beerson and exactly. Rodriguez at the back. And
you Tanner Beerson at the back.
Acapo at fullback. I'll hop in there as well, just because exactly. I like Carlos Acapo, the Equatorial Guinea international, funnily enough.
Thank you very much. But yeah, when him and Paul Marie get pushed forward and then you're leaving those two at the back, it's just over the first two matches, there's been no joy for the Earthquakes. They're getting, you know, left in space. I'm kind of imagining like Vancouver Whitecaps, Daniil Henry type stuff where he's left in acres of space all on his own, you know, has to handle dangerous attacking players in transition, which is, again, it's really surprising the way, you know, some of those Luchi Gonzalez FC Dallas teams, even though they maybe weren't the most potent offensively, they always did a really good job defensively. So surprising in that respect. I mean, the first match against FC Dallas, honestly, San Jose didn't play that terribly. Really a goalkeeping error by Danielle late on. It was like 93rd minute right at the death. a shot from a poor angle really shouldn't have slipped through underneath him, but it did. San Jose was I think at least even in that match on the road, so they'll feel hard done by that result, but no excuses at home. I think, you know, they've been playing in a 4-3-3 so far, trying to get Espinoza and Obobese involved with one of those other attackers. And I don't know if they found the right combination yet. I mean, something to talk about as well is that they've created less than one XG in their first two matches, which is, given those two up front, that's probably not what you're hoping for. I mean, for those who remember, Espinoza and Obobese combined for 23 goals between the two of them last season. Espinoza also added 8 assists, Obobese with 2 assists. So, you know, they're up at 33 goal contributions between them last year, which is, you know, darn near almost enough for an entire team. Like, they did really great work. But I think they haven't quite found a way to get those two clicking the way they were last season just yet. Amal Pellegrino, Norwegian winger, you know, veteran Norwegian winger, 33 years old, that they added from Bodo. He started one of the matches, but I don't know if they found the right mix, kind of like the Whitecaps up front just yet. So that's something to watch out for as well. But yeah, it's a team that I think we like the coaching. We like, kind of like White and Gall, the Obobese and Espinoza is enough to make you dangerous, but they have to figure things out a little bit more defensively and find a way to get the front three clicking. So, you know, kind of similar notes to the Whitecaps so far, but obviously a tougher form record. And you have to think, as we hinted at earlier on the show, the fact that this team is not very good defending in transition, that has to play right into the Whitecaps' hands. So you have to like that matchup for Vancouver going into this one on the weekend.
For sure. No, absolutely. And I think, yeah, just other notes looking at the San Jose team, like, I think the offense has been the big surprise, but look, I think that they should figure that out. Christian Espinoza, for me, my money, one of the most underrated players in the league. I had him in my best 11 vote last year, actually, I'm pretty sure. Cause I just, you know, he takes over games for the San Jose team and they'll get that back. I think that's been a bit of an adjustment that he's never been a true 10. He's always kind of played on the wing, but he was off to playing on the left, which is where Pellegrino's come in. So Espinoza's playing more on the right. Pellegrino's a more of a cut inside, you know, like you mentioned, a bit older. I think they miss Cade Cowell because, of course, they sold Cade Cowell for good money to Chivas, where he's, you know, he's had a decent start. Certainly not a name Forge fans will want to hear after how good Cowell was against them in Champions Cup. But I definitely think they missed that speed, that transition threat that Cowell could bring, even if he was a bit frustrating on the ball at times. So I think they're also figuring out that they don't have that same verticality that they would have had with him, Obobese, with Espinoza kind of ghosting in, right? You got guys like, you know, Espinoza and Pellegrino are going to want to combine in those same spaces, and it might take some time to figure that out. I think otherwise it'll be interesting to see how their midfield stabilizes, you know, because Grezzo can be a very solid ball winner, Jackson Uel is as well. Looking at the bench, like this week they started, you know, a bit of an MLS vet, I guess, at 26, or I guess American soccer vet, and Jack Scahan. He has a bunch of experience with the Earthquakes and Reno, Memphis City, kind of been all over. Just looking at that bench, for example, they signed Alfredo Morales from New York, a bit more of a quality ball-playing midfielder. I wonder if they could throw him in alongside of Grezzo and UL, where you're getting a bit more balance of, you know, guys like someone like Grezzo can do a little of the ball winning, and then you get UL and Morales on the ball more. So you can also help feed Espinoza and Pellegrino with a bit more regularity. Heck, maybe you see Benji Kakanovic get some more starts. I feel like he could also bring a bit of that verticality that they're missing with no Cowell and his departure. Otherwise, yeah, the big thing's going to be watch the fullbacks. I think they're decently set at center back, I'd say so. And in goal, Danielle, again, for my money, was one of the best goalkeepers last year, if not for an otherworldly year from Berkey. He would have probably won goalkeeper of the year. Like my vote was like Berkey 1, Danielle 2. Like, it was, again, Danielle was super excellent. But yeah, there's not much you can do when the fullbacks are getting torched. Like, watch all 3 LA goals. They just, every time fullback caught out of position playing behind, Paul Marie really struggled on that left side. I wonder if someone like a Tommy Thompson was an unused substitute. For my money, he's always usually pretty solid defensively, you know, good as a just, you know, no nonsense fullback who can also go forward. I wonder if we see someone like him slot in, because perhaps maybe he'll be what they need, just because Marie's always had super tantalizing offensive upside. Like, man, remember that goal he scored in 22 on his first game for the club? But, you know, maybe defensively it hasn't always been easy. So someone like a Tommy Thompson, maybe he gets leaned on. But yeah, to that point, I think if you're the Whitecaps, that transition threat is the big thing you're looking at. Because look, offensively, you don't know what version of San Jose you're going to get as they figured things out. I think the Whitecaps have shown defensively so far they should be able to handle those threats regardless. But it's okay. How can you match up against that midfield that, you know, still hasn't found the right balance? How can you expose space behind the fullback? So definitely, let's just say off first glance, this is screaming for a Fafa Pico / Lavonte Johnson up front. And, you know, maybe you're, if he's fully fit, this is screaming for a bit more of an Ali Ahmed third midfielder. Heck, maybe you go Seb Berhalter if Ali Ahmed's not ready to start, which I don't think he is going to be. So maybe we see 45-60 of Berhalter and then 45-30 of Ahmed to kind of overcome some of those midfield worries that San Jose's had.
Yeah, as you pointed out with San Jose, I think it's, you know, they have Grezzo, Ewell, Espinoza, Obobese locked into that front six. It's a question of what do you do with those, that one midfield spot, that one attacking spot to find the right combination. Just doesn't feel like they're quite there yet. I mean, I think something that's interesting is to watch out for in this match. Vancouver's been better so far this year, but Espinoza and really San Jose in general has loved through the first two matches playing in those early crosses, trying to find a Obobese in the box. So how does Ranko Veselinovic, Tristan Blackman, Matias Laborda, if he's in there, how do they handle a Obobese in the air? How do they handle those early crosses? I think it's something to watch out for. But ultimately, yeah, you feel like it's something that Vancouver can hopefully handle. And then can they take advantage of those spaces available? As you mentioned, I mean, it feels like it's too much too soon to see Lavonte Johnson get a start, but I would honestly love that. I like what I've seen from him so far, but I feel like this has Fafa Pico written all over it. I mean, an interesting one, Alex, without Ahmed maybe being ready to start just yet, and given the, you know, the options at wingback, fullback, is this still a Alessandro Shaw, or do you see Javane Brown in a more advanced role? Where do you think the Whitecaps go? I feel like Raposo is going to get another start, but where do the Whitecaps go with that other fullback spot? Because, you know, until Ahmed can go a 65, 70 minute stint, they're probably going to have to start someone else at that position.
Yeah, I'd probably see Seb Berhalter. I think Seb Berhalter would make a lot of sense in that sort of tweener role we saw Schopf play. Again, what's nice is this San Jose team isn't, again, no Cade Cowell there. You're not worried about some monstrous transition threat. So again, I think you'll be happy with the fact that you can go Blackman, Veselinovic, Laborda, and then have Berhalter play a bit more inverted with the goal of bringing Ahmed on as soon as he's fit and able to. So yeah, I could expect a big game for Berhalter, especially if he can ghost inside and help with the Espinoza matchup, help keep the San Jose midfielders a bit tighter, a bit more on their toes. I think that this game is screaming out for him, because yeah, look, I just think, you know, as I think we remember, it's very specific. I remember last year's away game to San Jose. If you remember correctly, San Jose just ended up killing the Whitecaps with early crosses, and Schopf, funnily enough, I want to say he got like an assist in that game, I want to say, or maybe not, something like that. But then he struggled a bit in transition as well. So I wonder if a Berhalter might be better suited to go Berhalter, Kubas, Vite of a sort of midfield three on the ball, and then off the ball, Berhalter going to that wing back position in the Whitecaps 3-4-3 could make sense. So definitely something to watch out for. And I think that'll be good for the Whitecaps, because that's the one big thing with their 3-4-3. You know, Vanni Sartini also kind of mentioned it as well in the tactical breakdown, is like teams that target the space behind the fullbacks San Jose doesn't look like they're going to want to do that too much, at least not directly. And I think, you know, someone like Berhalter playing that right wing back role, you could probably get away with it and would give you a bit more in possession.
Well, and as we talked about when Ahmed's back in the fold full time, just someone that can allow a Pedro Vite to get on the ball a little more and do Pedro Vite things, right? Like, if you, it's not going to be like exactly that double pivot of Seb Berhalter and Andres Cubas, but you get that defensive solidarity of those two defensive minded central mids at times. Can kind of free up Pedro to roam a little bit more on the ball. So I like that tactically. I guess I was just a little bit scared by the Seb Berhalter performance against Tigres, but I feel like they didn't necessarily put him in a great position against some dangerous wide players from Tigres. So I feel like this matchup's much different, and I'm glad that Seb got some quality minutes against Charlotte, and, you know, hopefully continues to get involved here, because I do feel like he has value at that position. It's just, you know, making sure, kind of like a Krylak, it's like not just about placing them in a certain position, but it's also about the instructions and the role you give them within that spot.
Well, that's it, right? That's the tough part. You can put the right personnel, but are they given the right instructions, right everything? I guess really on that note, that's about all I guess we really, you know, for now. I think the San Jose team's pretty well known under Luchi Gonzalez, what they want to do, who their key players are. I think it'll be a tough matchup for the Whitecaps. I think San Jose is going to be wanting a bounce back. This is a team that should be among the top six in the West at the end of the season, in my opinion. So they'll definitely see the two losses to Western teams to begin the year and be like, that's not who we are. That's not who we want to be. You know, they play at home again. They'll want to avenge a tough Cali Clásico loss at home to LA Galaxy. So yeah, definitely it should be an interesting game. I definitely think this is one where you're looking where this is a good chance for the Whitecaps to get a road win and maybe catch San Jose before they get out of this rut. But also, again, this San Jose team, they also have a few threats that can hurt the Whitecaps in areas that they'll struggle at. So definitely going to be curious to match up. I guess on that note, just to round off our kind of preview coverage, lineup and predictions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Yohei Takaoka in goal. I think the back three minus suspension shenanigans that we expected last week. So Aranko Veselinovic in the middle, Tristan Blackman and Matias Laborda, Andres Cubas and Pedro Vite in the midfield. And then I'm gonna piggyback off you, Alex, with that Seb Berhalter, Ryan Raposo in those wide roles, and then Fafa Pico with Brian White and Ryan Gold up front. I feel like that's, you know, pretty straightforward. Obviously, I mean, I don't know. Are we gonna do you think we see any minutes from Sam Adekubi? Is it too soon for him to play a 5-10 minute cameo on the weekend? I think that would be fun to watch out for. And then I'd also like to say, Levante, if Pico goes 65-70, I'd love to see Levante get like an extended stint. Let's see 20, 15, 25 minutes from Johnson, because I feel like he could grow into a bigger role in this squad. So he needs more than a 5-minute cameo in order to really show what he can offer.
Yeah, I'd co-sign everything. I think the starting 11, exactly the same for me. I think it just makes sense tactically. Love to see some more Levante again. I think his speed in this game could really cause some problems for the fullbacks. Would love to see some Ali Ahmed, of course. That's a given. And we'll see what some of the other subs end up being. The only thing is for Sam Adekugbe, even if he could go 5-10, I don't want to see it. You know what? No reason to push the travel. You know, from what it sounds like too, with the knee injury recovery, shout out to Hard Journalist, as usual, Harjeet Johal, a friend of the show. She did a great article over on Canadian Soccer Daily, speaking with the Whitecaps, one of their medical doctors or trainers, about the whole situation. And it was interesting because they were saying in the article that actually with the recovery, a lot of the big thing to watch out for is prehab. So how he stretches, how he warms up, and also recovery. So what they're saying is there might be some scenarios where he trains with the first team for a day, 2 days, 3 days, but then the next day he has to do recovery just because you're not pushing it. So I foresee for the next week or two, we might be seeing a lot of him. All full training, all back to individual work, all full training. So I thought that was a very interesting nugget, just because you see today, always in full training, and you get a little excited. So I think because of that, just continue to manage it. I think a fair date for him to want to even aim for 5-10 would be that next home game against RSL. I think it is at the end of the month. So hopefully they can trend towards that. And ideally, you do that. He likely skips out on the Canada window at the end of the month, stays with the team. You'd like to think that by April, he's up to full speed and given you 90s again, which would be massive. So definitely, it's again, something to keep an eye on. That's pretty much the big injury news. It sounds like Inge Utvik as well is back in full training. You know, Laborda's back from suspension. So really, other than Adekugbe, seems like pretty much everyone's back to full capacity, which is huge. And yeah, hopefully they can manage Adekugbe so that he's among that list soon. So yeah, again, if you haven't read that piece from Har and you want a little more of the technical details, it was really interesting to learn. Because it was like, I think he has it's tendonitis in his knee, and they were explaining a lot of how the recovery is different from most knees, especially on the prehab side and whatnot. So definitely a good way to learn about what's been ailing Adekugbe and what to look for in his recovery, say.
Yeah, and hopefully that's something where they can build it up in the right way where it can be sustainable, right? Because you're hoping that Adekugbe can, you know, maybe he's not going to play on double match weeks, but if you can get 70, 75, 80 minutes out of him on a regular basis, week in, week out, that's obviously the goal for this team. So they got to do whatever they need to do to make sure he can get to that point. So good points there. And shout out to Har, always, you know, the first and last person at training, bringing us the scoops on the injury front, and any underreported stories. I think you can always count on Har to be putting in the work on that kind of stuff. Okay, score line for me. This is one, Alex, where I'd really like to predict a big Whitecaps kind of comeback victory, but I feel like Obobese and Espinoza are due some goals. So I'm going to go entertaining 2-2 draw down in San Jose, down at still PayPal Park, right? We haven't changed sponsorship, but hopefully.
I isn't it? Oh, God. I want to say, like, I guess it is PayPal Park, is it? Yeah, it's still PayPal Park. I still my head. It's still Ieva Stadium in my head.
But still PayPal Park, the stadium that's already out of date before it was ever constructed. But yeah, I feel like those two up front for San Jose, they're going to have to find some joy eventually. So they get on the board, but maybe White and Gold also begin to cook with Fafa Pico up front. So yeah, I'm going to go 2-2 draw.
Yeah, no, I'm similar vein again. Like last week, we both predicted Whitecaps wins, right? If I'm not mistaken, which just didn't go our way, especially me. I went for like a 3-1. I unfortunately I captained Ryan Gold in my fantasy just because I want to be different and not captain Messi every week, and it's costing me because I'm like third in my league. And I think if I'd captain Messi, I'd be run away with first. So this is what you get for trying to be nerdy and different and, you know, straying from the different range. So I don't think I'll be captaining Gold this week in fantasy. And that's because I'm predicting a 1-1 draw. I just think it's something where it's a bit low event, bit cagey. I could draw as a fair result where the Whitecaps can grind out at that point on the road, where and San Jose, they find their feet with their first points of the year, but they're still probably not fully satisfied with the result like that. I think I could see that based on the matchup, based on where things are trending. So definitely we'll see how that plays out, and if Sam and I have better luck in our predictions, and if my fantasy goes better. Because look, I've actually had a really good fantasy year in my defense. Like, I've been all in on Grassley, he's been cooking. I've had some good returns from Cucho Hernandez. I had some other good ones, like Patrick Schulte did me good in week one. Jackson Reagan did me good this week. Some other good, like, I think, again, I had like 80, 90 or 100 points in the first week and like 80, 90 points this week. So again, if I just got to get the captain, we'll see if I bite the bullet and just pick Messi, even though knowing me, I'll probably end up with some completely out of the bar pick by the time Friday comes around.
All right. Well, transitioning beautifully right into this season of not this season, this weekend's MLS action. We just wanted to shout out a couple matchups to watch. I mean, for me, Alex, the couple that stood out right away, Philadelphia and Seattle, two perennial contenders in their respective conferences. Obviously, Philly dealing with Tonka Calf madness recently. Seattle not off to a great start. So who can kind of break through? I think that's a that's an interesting match to watch. Then Red Hot Inter Miami facing up with CF Montreal. That's an interesting one. LAFC in action against Sporting Kansas City. And then we were talking about a couple players to watch on the Colorado Rapids. They face up against Real Salt Lake this week as well. So those are four matches that kind of had my eye that I'll probably be watching out for this week. But yeah, curious for your thoughts on where your focus will be.
Yeah, look, you got to shout out the Rocky Mountain Derby, right? Whenever Real Salt Lake and Colorado play. So that'll definitely be a good one. We'll see if any snow's on tap. And yeah, I love the Miami show because I think this will be the first time Montreal plays Miami since Messi and friends are in. So this is going to be a real good test for that.
And that, that has its own window on Sunday too. That is Sunday late in the afternoon. So they've kind of rolled out the red carpet for that one to, for you to watch.
Yeah, no, so definitely it will be exciting to see how Sirois, Waterman, a couple Canadians as well cope with Messi and friends. So definitely one not to miss. But yeah, it's some interesting matchups across the board here. Oof, I'm just taking a look. I definitely think Nashville-LA is one to watch because Nashville's been dealing with Champions Cup and they still are. But quietly, just, you know, they got a draw on the road last week against Colorado. They got a draw the week I draw home the week before against Red Bulls. They're grinding out points despite balancing Champions Cup. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they do against this LA Galaxy team that looks really hot offensively because Nashville's defense so far has been immaculate. And that's despite Walker Zimmerman only playing 88 minutes. Canadian Lucas McNaughton putting in a big shift back there, holding it down. So I think definitely that will be one to watch. Very curious about LAFC, SKC, because it feels like both of those teams, SKC got a bit hosed, it sounds like, in the Philadelphia game was the sentiment that was going around. At least that's what I was seeing on Twitter. And then, of course, LAFC feels they got hosed by the snow, or I guess, can you get hosed by snow? There's some sort of terminology that doesn't feel accurate there. But yeah, they weren't a fan of the white stuff falling from the sky. So I think both teams will definitely look for a bit of revenge in that game. So I think those are two very good Western games to keep an eye on. Otherwise, Cincinnati, DC United. I think DC, they were missing Benteke this weekend after his hat trick in week one. We'll see if he's back for this. But, you know, so far a win and a draw for DC. Can they go to Cincy and catch them out? That'll definitely be an interesting Eastern matchup to watch. Otherwise, I don't know. I'm interested by Orlando City, Minnesota. I think that this Orlando team, they look good, but then they just got pasted by Miami, right? Like that's tough. But then in midweek, they draw Tigres. So no doubt their focus is probably going to be a bit split as they have a midweek trip to the Volcan next week to watch. But definitely something where you'd also think for their sake at home as well. They're going to want a bit of a bounce back after the Messi domination this past weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Plenty of interesting matchups to watch out for in what is, I guess, match day four, even though that feels wrong. Essentially match day three, match day two for the Vancouver Whitecaps. And obviously we'll be watching San Jose Earthquakes versus Vancouver Whitecaps on Saturday night. So yeah, hope you've enjoyed the podcast, our recap of the match that was against Charlotte, teeing you up for this weekend of MLS action. Alex, any final thoughts here before we sign off?
No, I think as usual, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gungaruzic, on Blue Sky at Alex Gungaruzic, on Threads and Instagram at Adrian on the Case, where again, we'll be doing as much talking about MLS, or, you know, of course, we've got Gold Cup tonight. I think this will probably be out after this, so we'll know the results. But we got Canada US tonight, so this will probably be out the morning after. So we'll know if it was a historic Canadian win, a frustrating loss, a moral victory, etc. But a lot of good stuff going on in the Gold Cup, Women's Gold Cup over there. So I definitely keep an eye on that. Canadians abroad, like last week, every Canadian strike or every passport. Or every striker with a Canadian passport scored or got an assist. So we'll see if they can keep this up this week. But, you know, former Whitecap Theo Bear scored at Ibrox against Rangers for Motherwell's first win over Rangers in like 22 years. So I'll be talking about all sorts of similar storylines that might occur this week on the socials. So keep an eye on that. Otherwise, you can find the pod on Twitter at Third Sub Pod. Make sure to tap in there. And anywhere basically where you get the podcast, Apple, Spotify, anything else, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single podcast drop. So we definitely appreciate that. And of course, do feel free to leave a review if you've been enjoying it. Again, we've been very happy and very proud to see the support that you guys have provided early on in the season. I've been excited to share these podcasts with you. And we're definitely excited to keep going as the season grows and we get games with regularity. And of course, we get to talk about some CPL, some League One down the road, which we can't wait for.
Absolutely, yeah. Shout out to the, regardless of the result, shout out to the women's national team. What is this evening in podcast time playing against the U.S.? That's going to be fun to watch. You can find me, as always, at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter, at thirdsub.ca for all, you know, our pre- and post-match content from Vancouver Whitecaps. Also hoping to, you know, rev up some League One BC and CPL content as those seasons draw closer. Just like the podcast as well, if you scroll down to the bottom of our page, you can enter your email and subscribe to all the latest articles and stuff like that. You know, we promise not to bombard you with unnecessary messages, but if you want to stay up to date with what we're dropping on the website, it'll keep you up to date and all that good stuff. So thank you so much for listening, everyone. Enjoy the matches this upcoming weekend, and we'll chat again soon.